The Obamacare delay. Does Joe Donnelly deserve credit? Tim Berry for state GOP chairman. Who will be the next state auditor? Scandal at FSSA. Mike Pence confronted on gay marriage and an attempt at same-sex divorce. That plus Brad Stevens and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending July 5, 2013.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.
This week, Indiana Senator Joe Donnelly says he still supports Obamacare, but will continue to seek changes so that it works for everyone. Donnelly praised the decision to delay a requirement that small businesses provide health insurance for employees. Employers say it caused confusion and uncertainty that made them reluctant to hire new employees. Last month, Donnelly joined Maine Republican Susan Collins on a bill that it would exempt small businesses from the Obamacare requirement.
This is neither a Republican or a Democratic thing. This is to try to make lives easier for our business owners, make it for our employees, too, for all of us who work for a living.
Did Joe Donnelly help convince the Obama administration to change course? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender, editor for the StateHouseFile.com, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Mike McDaniel, did the administration need encouragement to delay the insurance requirement?
Well, they got a lot of it. One of the biggest hindrances to recovery in our economy, of course, is uncertainty in the environment in which small business and all business, for that matter, have been operating for the better part of the last 6 or 8 years. So it's a problem. And this law is so complicated that that uncertainty was ramped up dramatically. And it was hindering hiring people because they didn't want to have the added cost. Senator Donnelly, I do give him credit for stepping up and saying, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, that they should exempt businesses under 50 people. They're not going to do that, but they did delay it. So even though I don't think this changes anything, it only delays it for a year, something is going to have to change in this very complicated law before business is comfortable with this. It will continue to hinder hiring people because small business is just not going to add the added cost of adding insurance to people to get over that 50 number.
Well, and when we talked about this before, Congressman Luke Messer had a bill in the House that would exempt schools. This delay also takes schools off the hook. So there was pressure coming from more than one place.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, since the Republican requirement that this be an insurance program as opposed to a government-administered program, it was definitely going to be more complicated for people to do. And they've also not allocated sufficient funds so that the public relations campaign about what it does and how to do it is full bore. So this takes a smaller group out of the larger number. The larger number goes ahead, and the program will go ahead with those states with enough foresight to opt into their own exchange system. Of course, Indiana is not one of them yet, but the money from here will be exported else to other places, and it will also be exported to help publicize the program. And eventually, people are going to be covered by it, and it's a good thing. And everybody, including the president, said from the beginning of Obamacare that this wasn't a perfect bill. They didn't expect it to be, and it would have to be like Medicare before
it. But this delay comes as the delay comes as a surprise, doesn't it?
Well, I think I don't know if about a surprise. I mean, they've been talking about it for some time, and I think Joe Donnelly deserves a lot of credit for stepping up and saying, you know, this is it's the right time to delay, not to stop it, but to delay it.
Joe Donnelly, for a guy in his first term, has been pretty effective.
Joe Donnelly has picked his issues well and has picked his positions on those issues well and has been able to communicate that broadly. So I think he gets a lot of points for political style and political heft, especially for somebody who's new in the Senate. So, you know, good for him.
Somebody who's managing to stay toward the middle, coming from a state where he needs to.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in this case, he gets to be for the health care plan, but against the things about it that some people don't like. I mean, the hard part about this is whether you're for the health care plan or you're against it, if it's going to work, it means that there have to be sacrifices. And this is an example of, as we're going into it, of the folks who put it in place kind of backing off the hard parts. And so, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see if it ever actually gets implemented in the way it was intended, or if the people who advocate for it are going to chicken out of parts of it.
Governor Mike Pence wants State Auditor Tim Berry to be the next state GOP chairman. Berry is in his second term after serving two terms as state treasurer. He will replace Eric Holcomb, who is stepping down to join the staff of U.S. Senator Dan Coats. Berry will be joined at party headquarters by new executive director Kyle Robertson, who was the 2012 campaign manager for Mike Pence. Ann Delaney, did that pick come out of the blue?
Well, it came out of mainstream Republicans. I mean, I don't know that Tim Berry's ever been identified with the Tea Party, for example, which I presume some of Mike Pence's supporters would have liked to see happen. He could have, though. You know, I really had hoped he was going to take a bold position. There are a number of qualified women out there. It would have been nice if as they keep talking on the national level about inclusion and the need to have women involved and on and on and on and on, if he had picked a woman. But I guess that was too much for the governor.
Let me see if I can draw a line here for you, because the Republicans who want to pick a woman are worried about what they call the Murdoch problem, the problem that was expressed by Richard Murdoch in last year's campaign. What this move does is it keeps Murdoch out of the race for auditor, doesn't it?
Well, it doesn't necessarily keep him out of the race for governor or for auditor.
But he won't be appointed auditor.
But he won't be appointed auditor.
And the next probably. And the new auditor will run as an incumbent.
Probably. That's probably true.
Was that also part of the calculation?
There are a lot
here?
Of probablys here, because there's no guarantees. I mean, just because whoever the governor appoints to be the next auditor to the state of Indiana doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be running again as auditor. It doesn't necessarily mean that you can have a challenge in a convention and somebody else can be selected. So there are a lot of ifs there.
Sure.
But the ideal situation is what you described. I mean, you want them to pick, I would like them to pick somebody that's going to run as an incumbent and be successful. And I think that's what the goal is here. But there are no guarantees in this business, just like you won't hear him talking about who those candidates are going to be until they elect Tim Berry, state chairman, on the 22nd. Right. Then you'll hear him talk about who the potential people are that he's thinking about for state auditor. But the Tim Berry pick's a good pick. He's a solid guy. He's been elected to statewide office four times. The county organization, the people of the county organization love the guy. He's respected, he's well-liked, and, you know, I think that's a home run for state chairmanship. He's going to fit right in. They're not going to miss a beat there, and we'll see how the other plays out. There are already guys out there and people running, guys and women, who are running for that job.
Starting
and now, instead of a convention, it's a one-vote kind of a deal
for
the time being. So.
Nobody understands that better than Tom Saunders, state representative, who he filed the paperwork to start an exploratory committee on Wednesday morning and came back to the State House to find out that Tim Berry had been selected.
Perfect example. Tom's been out there talking to county chairman, working it. He's a quality guy. People respect him. People like him. He's well liked with the organization folks. But now it's a whole different ballgame. Now you got to convince one person that you're the right person for that job.
And so still, to go back to what you were saying, I mean, this is very smart for Mike Pence, because this potential of having Murdoch, and he obviously can still run.
He's been testing the waters.
But
for
the potential of Murdoch running in 2014. Would be difficult for the Republicans to deal with, because there is a faction of the Republican Party who thinks that the media hurt him, or that or that he should have done better in the race, or whatever. And they're looking for a way to redeem him. And then there's another wing of the party who's still mad at him. And so that was not going to be pretty. And this, I think, helps to fix that problem.
How unusual is it? I mean, I don't remember ever seeing this, to take a sitting office holder and make them a party chair. That's
right. I've never seen that either. That's the thing that surprised me about the appointment. Not that Tim Berry was the appointee, just the timing of it, and from the position of a state office holder. I think that Leslie's hit it right on the head. I think this solves some problems politically for the governor and the Republican Party. And I think Tim Berry does fill that middle ground, has a lot of popularity, and so he can be a coalition builder in a party that really needs it. I mean, it's easy to get, when you've got supermajorities in the governor's office and most of the statewides, it's easy to get your eye off the ball. And so that'll be really the big task for Tim Berry, and I think he can do that.
And one of the things Tim Berry talked a lot about was the importance of focusing on the grassroots,
right,
and the county officials. And you're right, he has a great relationship with those county parties, and
he's
that is
going
to be very important for keeping the Republican momentum.
Yeah, but there are also going to be some people who think that he should serve out his term. I mean, there's always resentment when people resign.
About a year and a half left on his
term.
Well, so what, is this an employment deal?
No,
he couldn't run again, so they're going to give him another job?
It's not like it's factored he can run again.
Well, but the point still is...
They are manipulating the system.
They're manipulating it, and to the extent that they're perceived as manipulating it to stop Murdoch, which is what's going on here, that's really going to irritate that wing of the party. And by the way, those convention delegates have to be elected. So we'll see what happens in a primary, I might add. And we know what the impact of the Tea Party is in the Republican primary.
Yeah, we hold every office there is except for two, so, you know, we're doing all right.
Moving on, 187,000 people in Indiana received letters this week from the Indiana Family and Social Services Administration. The agency says they are letting people know their personal information may have been shared. The FSSA says a computer programming error by a company called RCR back in May caused documents to be duplicated and mailed to the wrong people. 4,000 people may have had their Social Security numbers mailed out.
Initially, we had such a small trickling in of information that we really didn't know what we were dealing with. So we had to set out with RCR to figure out, okay, why are certain people getting the wrong information?
Jim Gavin of FSSA there, John Ketzenberger, was this handled properly?
Oh, well, I think they were in difficult circumstances with the way the information came about, and then they had to do some forensic examination to figure out exactly what the problem was and to get it fixed. So I think the FSSA handled it about as well as they could. I know there are a lot of people who are frustrated at the long time lag between when the incidents occurred and when they found out about it. So I think anything that they can do, and if they want to do even more for people, is to help people who may have had their information shared ensure that they aren't harmed by that. And I think they're trying to do that, but this is definitely raising questions, and rightly so. They need to get to the bottom of this and why it occurred.
Is one of the questions something to do with using outside contractors?
I think that's always a question. I mean, I don't think there's any particular evidence that using an outside contractor as opposed to doing it themselves would, you know, have prevented the problem or caused this problem. But I mean, this is the era we live in now, and it is really scary for people, especially an agency like FSSA. I mean, they hold not only your Social Security number, but they hold some of these people's financial information and their medical information. And so this kind of a breach is scary for people.
Not good.
Well, I mean, this is a huge problem. The FSSA mails out over 100 different pieces of correspondence every year. Over a volumes, over a million pieces that they mail out. And this computer programming error, which caused this, 187,000 people were put at risk. And that is not good in any way, shape, or form, whether the government did it or a private vendor did it. To say that the governor's not happy about that would be an understatement. I've had a conversation with him about this, and he was not very pleased with this. But as John said, they've handled it about as well as they could based on the timeline. They have to not only decide how deep the problem is, they also have to notify the federal government. They have to notify the attorney general before they do anything else. All of those things have to happen. They have to notify the people that were involved, and they've done that. some of the people they notified got information from some other people. Of the 187,000 people that were put at risk, so far as of Wednesday, they had actual 14 situations where they think there may have been somebody compromised. Well, any is too many.
Right.
But 14 out of 187,000 so far, and I underline so far, the problem has been kept to a very, very small minimum. But, you know, this is not a good situation to be in.
Can you quantify it?
Can I quantify it? Well, I think
on a political level?
I think it's a political problem. I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's a make or break political problem, if that's what you're asking. And the question is whether it's a pattern and whether or not there's a pattern with the outsourcing of a more cavalier attitude towards this. And if that's the case, then they better take steps to make sure it never happens again.
The governor was promoting fitness at an event in South Bend this week, but he found himself defending his views on gay marriage. The governor and other local leaders met to go on a walk, but were met by dozens of people opposed to a proposed ban on same-sex marriage. Willow Weatherall says the governor, they want the governor to understand there are a lot of Hoosiers who support same-sex marriage.
I told him that I understood his beliefs were deeply and sincerely held, but that I thought that discrimination was never defensible. And that I know that I'll personally be working to make Indiana the 13th state to support marriage equality.
I was very pleased to see everyone come out. You know, as I said when I was first elected, my ambition is to serve and to be the governor of all the people of Indiana. And I welcome the opportunity to hear their views on issues that are important.
Leslie Weidmetter, did the governor invite interruptions such as this when he censured comments on his Facebook page?
There's no doubt that doesn't help. But this is going to be an enormous issue facing Hoosiers next year, and depending on what happens with the constitutional amendment, for several years to come. And this is going to be erupting all over the place. These kinds of situations are going to keep happening. I think the Facebook situation just exacerbated it, but makes it more newsworthy now, but this is just the beginning of what's going to be a long campaign on both sides here in Indiana.
Well, the Facebook situation put a spotlight on the governor's position here, and we talked last week about how they were taking off opposing views from his page, and he put an apology there and promised to put a new policy on the Facebook page. Hasn't done that yet in a week.
You know, it's not that hard to do. Facebook's been around long enough that there are some standard protocols that you can implement and publish and let everybody know exactly what it is that you will accept and what you won't accept. So it's probably a mistake to let it go a week or any longer than it already has. Leslie's exactly right about the issue itself, and I thought the governor handled this situation and his response was great. But he's going to have patience, because he's going to hear that a lot from a lot of people, probably some far less thoughtful than the woman that was quoted here. So this is going to be an interesting time for the administration and for Hoosiers at large, because this is an issue that has become foremost in a lot of people's minds.
And as we pointed out last week, the governor has nothing to do with this constitutional amendment necessarily,
right,
unless he chooses to.
And he can also say that we already have a statute in place that takes care of it. And if it weren't being driven by the right-wing agenda, we could leave that alone. I mean, there's no reason to have this debate. And I think they're actually swimming up tide, or from the force of public opinion. I think public opinion, particularly with those, you know, 35 and younger, has changed dramatically in the last 10 years. And it's another example of the Republicans being out of touch.
But will supporters of same-sex marriage hurt themselves if they disrupt public events?
Well, I thought the governor handled that well, but I thought the demonstrators handled that well as well. I think any time you shout somebody down or you do something that interferes with either party's ability to speak, it's to the detriment of whatever side you're arguing. But there are a lot of thoughtful people who are behind the notion that this constitutional amendment is wrong for Indiana, and many of them are the business leaders in this community. I don't expect them to disrupt it, but I do expect them to make themselves heard.
Make much out of this?
Well, I mean, look, there's not a day that goes by that every governor hears somebody that disagrees with them about some issue. I mean, you can't go out in public. I mean, that's what they're for, you know, to go out and talk to people and find out what people are thinking. And this is one of those cases. But, you know, he's also hearing from people who agree with what he feels is correct, that marriage should be between a man and a woman. So he's hearing from those folks, too. And, you know, he means it when he says he wants to be the governor of all the people. I mean, this guy has been a champion of people expressing their opinions. He did it in Congress. He's doing it now. And, you know, because he had somebody in his staff take some people off Facebook, that wasn't Mike Pence that did that. It was his staff. They made a mistake. He's apologized for it. And so he's sincere when he says he wants to be the governor of all the people.
If you're sincere about wanting to be the governor of all the people, then it seems to me if attitudes are changing and going in a different direction, you don't enshrine a particular social policy in the Constitution.
His attitude hadn't changed. Just because the president's attitude changed after he was reelected.
I'm not talking
doesn't
about
mean, no, but my point
I'm talking
is, my
about
point
the
is
population.
This.
Yeah.
My
I'm
point is
about
this.
The
just because he still believes that doesn't mean that he's wrong.
Well,
all right.
I'm not saying he's wrong, okay. But I'm saying enshrining his
then
view.
He has a right to say what he believes.
Absolutely.
Still with
but
this
enshrining
now.
His view in Hang the Constitution on. Is a different story.
An Indianapolis man is hoping that Indiana will permit a same-sex divorce, even though same-sex marriage is against the law here. Donald Schultz Lee was married to Justin Schultz Lee in Massachusetts in 2009. He now wants a divorce and recently filed a petition with the Marion County clerk. He can't get a divorce in Massachusetts because he doesn't meet the residency requirement. If Judge David Shaheed rejects the petition, the attorney for Schultz Lee, Kathy Harmon, is prepared to go to the State Court of Appeals.
I think if my client ever wants to have a hope of getting on with his life and remarrying, that he's going to have to get a divorce.
And Delaney, will Indiana laws change to keep up with changes in other states?
See, that's the problem here. You know, you've got 13 states that represent that recognize same-sex marriage now.
And Indiana does not.
I've got that.
I mean, it's not just illegal here. We don't recognize a marriage that took place in another state.
Well, that's a problem, okay? Because what happens if you marry your first cousin at age 14 in Mississippi or Alabama? Okay, and then you come here and you want a divorce. That's not a legal marriage in Indiana. But we will grant the divorce here. Unless
will?
Why not?
I will.
You think that every court looks back as to what state you were married in and what the laws are in that state compared to the laws of Indiana?
That's what's going on in this case.
Well, that's because
it's
same sex. But, I mean, there are different laws. That's why each state sets its own. And
right.
If we don't give full faith and credit to their ability to marry people, well, you know,
yeah.
Where does that go?
Beth White, the Marion County clerk, was taken a little off guard by this. She was already prepared to have people come in and seek same-sex marriage licenses. She's prepared for people to challenge the law. I mean, because of the Supreme Court ruling that basically said that it's discrimination to deny benefits to same-sex couples, we're going to see a lot of tests of the law.
Sure. But I think in this case, because the law is very specific about not recognizing same-sex marriage in Indiana, I find it hard to believe that this one's going to, you know, be successful in an effort to bring a divorce here.
I don't know. I think the courts are going to have to find a way to deal with this. I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, this person is in a very difficult situation, and I think that in the Indiana courts will be very thoughtful about this, and
we'll
I don't think that the law contemplated this situation really, and so I expect to see a lot of these kinds of issues come up, and it will be very interesting to see what the judges
do. And it's
do.
All in a new light because of the Supreme Court ruling.
Well, that's right. It is. And it will get a lot of attention because this almost could be viewed as a way to get the law enacted by challenging the fact that it's not legal here. How do you separate the two issues? It reminds me when Indiana's law on tattoos went into effect. It was already illegal to get tattoos in Indiana, but in order to make it legal, you had to limit the people who could get it, you had to make it fully legal. I know it's not.
There's your precedent. There's your precedent. All right, time
now
for
like
viewer feedback.
Warman,
each week
I?
We pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is: should Indiana permit same-sex divorce? Your choices are A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question was: did Mike Pence handle his Facebook page in responsible fashion? 66% said yes. 32% said no. 2% said maybe he should stick to Twitter. Big response, by the way. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Butler basketball coach Brad Stevens is leaving to become coach of the Boston Celtics. The news came as a shock this week to everyone on the Butler campus. Fans say they're heartbroken the team is losing the coach who took them to two national title games.
He's going to get more money. get more out of his career, I say congratulations.
I think it's stunned all across his campus. I mean, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, they're all blowing up. It's just heartbreak.
Mike McDaniel, did Brad Stevens quit on Butler?
No. This is a great opportunity for him and his family, and he'd be crazy if he didn't take it, actually.
$22 million?
It sets his family up for life. It's one of the great professional teams in all of sports, and he can always come back to college sports if he doesn't. What I hate about it is his number one goal now is to beat the Pacers, and I don't like that at all.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender of the StateHouseFile.com, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast or starting Monday. You can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.